I'd like to call this regular council meeting to order. Would you all please rise for the invocation?
We meet to serve our community and endeavor to be worthy custodians of all that has been entrusted to us. Let us be concerned only for what will promote good government. May we bring to our council chamber minds that think and hearts that feel, so that in our deliberations we may display imagination, wisdom, and courage, and the will to do our work for the good of all.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. And the roll call, please.
Your Worship, all members of council are present, save and except Councillor Passero, who is away for a personal commitment this evening.
Thank you. There is one addendum. We have one delegation, Laura Memrick, who is unable to attend this evening, so that will be one less delegation. We have quite a few this evening. We've got quite a bit of business. But there's been so much going on in the town of Fort Erie that I need to make some reference to some of the things. And we're going to be getting later on into the agenda recognizing a number of Fort Erie Secondary School students who are here with us. They have reached truly remarkable heights with respect to some of their activities, and we're going to be hearing from the principal who will, I'm sure, give us a full breakdown of their accomplishments and recognize those from Fort Erie Secondary School who have helped them reach such great success. Today happens to be World Refugee Day, and of course Fort Erie has a long history of helping refugees, not just those in the 20th century and the 21st century, but as far back as the 18th century, as you'll recall, with the United Empire Loyalists who came to Canada, and then of course those escaping slavery in the 18th and 19th centuries. This also happens to be, I'm advised by my colleague, Councillor Nutt, the summer solstice. This, of course, is the longest daylight during the year, and this is the day that we all live for, because 6 months from today will be the shortest daylight, and that's the day that we all cringe. It's the first time in 30 years that it's been, it was a full moon actually last night, so it's actually just starting to wane now. Councillor Nutt, I was on top of that one. The big event, of course, that we've had in Fort Erie in June was the Battle of Ridgeway celebrations and all of the activities and events that took place around that. And I wanted to congratulate Russ Wilson, Jane Davies, and Jude Wilson for their work with respect to that. They, of course, had a solid team of volunteers that helped them for the Battle of Ridgeway celebration that took place on June the 4th. They had a number of sponsors that helped them. And I also wanted to thank everyone who came out. That was a fantastic day, and of course, couldn't have happened without the Queen's Own Rifles of Canada and the Royal Hamilton Light Infantry who were here and put on a marvelous display, and we provided them with the freedom of the city, which gives them the right now and henceforth to march through Fort Erie when they choose, and hopefully it won't be often, with their arms and their bayonets. And we received later today recognition from the Queen's Own Rifles of Canada thanking the town of Fort Erie for the support that we provided to them with respect to this. And so I'll share this with the councillors later on. But it was truly a wonderful event and a great honor for us in Fort Erie to have those two regiments here 150 years after they basically saved our community and paved the way for Canadian Confederation. Same. I also wanted to extend appreciation to Mary Friesen and Gary Roy for the two-day historical conference that they held at the Clarion Hotel on June 2nd and 3rd, which revolved around the Battle of Ridgeway and its significance in our Canadian history. And then finally, I wanted to recognize the Niagara Parks Commission and all of those who participated in the reenactment of the Fenian raids on June 11th and 12th at Old Fort Erie. Again, it was a wonderful day, really good turnout, and the reenactors fortunately all lived to fight another day. We had some interesting anniversaries also in Fort Erie this past couple of weeks. For one, we had the, coincidentally, 90th anniversary for both the Ridgeway Garden Club and the Fort Erie Horticultural Society. They provide flowers and floral arrangements throughout the municipality. They have partnerships with a variety of organizations, including, I know the Fort Erie Horticultural Society has a partnership with the Fort Erie Secondary School through their greenhouses, and that's an issue that we need to pay attention to, because there's a wonderful horticultural program at Fort Erie Secondary School, and I understand that that's maybe an endangered program, so we'll need to work with the principal and find ways that we can move that forward. There was also the 20th anniversary this past weekend of Wakaniaten Under the Rainbow Child Care Center. They now have 100 children ranging in ages from 6 months to 12 years, and they're looking at expansion opportunities. Councillor Zanko and Councillor Passero were there to help me celebrate. I don't know, did you get any food? Or did you left beforehand? Well, they had a large barbecue and lots of people there for that. Last week, latter part of last week, I attended, and Councillor Butler was also in attendance at the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative, which involves over 100 municipalities that front on the Great Lakes or the St. Lawrence River, and they have been in existence now for about 15 years and provide lobbying efforts with respect to issues that arise that are of significance to those municipalities on or near the Great Lakes. They dealt with a number of resolutions this past week. First and foremost happened to be the resolution stemming from the efforts of Waukesha, Wisconsin, to divert water from the Great Lakes outside the watershed. That, of course, is terribly significant for all of us that live on the Great Lakes, because once an opportunity is granted for water to be diverted from the Great Lakes outside our watershed, there's absolutely no means of preventing that from happening over and over again. And the concerns that were raised were, believe it or not, southwestern United States may be looking for ways to divert water from the Great Lakes into the Mississippi water system down into southwestern United States. Among other resolutions, they related to climate change, the Asian carp in the Great Lakes, nutrient flows into Lake Erie, Great Lakes water quality, phragmites, radioactive waste, and sewer overflows into the Great Lakes and the St. Lawrence River. To get back to coming events, we have on June the 21st, which is tomorrow, National Aboriginal Day. There will be celebrations at the Fort Erie Native Friendship Center. They start in the afternoon, and I'm advised that all are welcome to attend. On June the 24th, the Wall of Fame Dinner starts at 6 p.m. at the Leisureplex. For those of you who are interested and don't have tickets, the Fort Erie Kinsmen are sponsoring that dinner. On Saturday the 25th, the first show in the Sugar Bowl. That's being sponsored by the municipality. There's some other sponsoring organizations, I believe Penn Financial and the Central Station Firefighters are involved in that. And it's one of the recent Star Wars movies. Can anybody help me with which one it is? It is the latest one. Do you not know the name, Chief? Counselor?
The Force Awakens.
The Force Awakens. Thank you. Somebody here is tuned in. So that's going to be a great event. I think people start gathering at 8 o'clock. Of course, the movie will be shown thereafter. They are expecting a large crowd. So if you're planning on going, get there early. I don't think you need to show up the night before, but get there early. On June the 27th, a week from tonight, is the annual Chamber of Commerce Golf Tournament. It's being held at Bridgewater, so they're back in Fort Erie, which is good news. I understand the weather is going to be good. Central Fire Station is holding a block party on July the 1st from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. The Ridgeway Summer Festival, it takes place July 9th and 10th, and I think that's before we get to our next council meeting. And finally, I just received notification. Sorry, I meant to mention a couple of other things. One happened to deal with the rollout of the Healthy Kids initiative, which the town of Fort Erie and Niagara-on-the-Lake are partnering in, along with the Boys and Girls Club and, help me, Russ, who's the other one? United Way and Canadian Tire. Thank you. So it's a 10-week program. It'll be operating four times a year in neighborhood parks in Niagara-on-the-Lake and in Fort Erie. There's a vehicle that's been purchased that has equipment and will help to transform the neighborhood that it goes into a mobile kids zone. There will be different activities during the season, so depending on what the season is, it could be snowshoeing in the winter, orienteering in the spring, that type of thing. And that will be offered in Fort Erie at various parks in July and August this year. I believe it's the Sugar Bowl and the Waterfront Park in Crystal Beach. So that takes me to the final announcement, and that has to do with on June the 30th, I was just notified that the Royal Canadian Legion Branch 97, which is the Fort Erie branch, is going to be holding a ceremony, and one of their veterans, Norman Edward Duffy Andrews, is going to be honored by the government of France for his service in the liberation of France from the Nazis during the Second World War. The ceremony is going to take place at the banquet hall at 1 p.m., and the Legion of Honor will be presented by the French Consul General to Mr. Andrews. That's a wonderful recognition, and when we think about it, that's a war that ended over 70 years ago. So these are not young men now. These are men who are being honored, who are well into their, at least their late 80s, some of them into their 90s. Those who are officers might even be 100 or older. So that's a wonderful recognition, and if any of you are able to make it, I hope you can attend. That is, those are the announcements. I did advise Mr. Wilson and Ms. Davies that if there are any counselors that had any questions or comments with respect to the 150th Battle of Ridgeway commemoration, that I would allow you to ask them now. So I don't know if there are any. Thank you very much. We appreciate your assistance and stellar work on that. That takes us then to disclosures of pecuniary interest. Disclosures. There being none, then there's a notice of a public meeting with respect to property rezoning at 780 Ridge Road, which will take place on Monday, July the 11th, here in the council chambers at 6 p.m., and the information report with respect to that property rezoning application will be made available on our website on Wednesday, July the 6th. That then takes me to the regional councillor's report. Good evening, Councillor Annunziata.
In your worship, members of council, members in the audience, we're going to start by talking about roads, bridges, and pipes. And if you haven't noticed already, that Fort Erie has been a hotbed for infrastructure projects that have started and will be finishing. Some other projects are on the work schedule. They'll be starting as well. I want to start with the Central Avenue Bridge, just an update on that one. The big slide, as I have coined the term, will be taking place July 25th and July 26th. For those of you who don't know, it's going to be an infrastructure marvel. And for those of you who have crossed the Central Avenue Bridge, you can see that the bridge is being built adjacent to the Central Avenue Bridge. I've gotten a lot of questions as far as why are they moving the bridge? And they're not moving the bridge. What's going to take place is, at the right moment, that section of the bridge will be slid into place. So we plan on making a bit of an event down in the Bridgeburg District. Hopefully there'll be a viewing platform that people can come and see and watch this engineering marvel. Working collaboratively with the BIA, Councillor McDermott, there should be a viewing area for people to take part, and hopefully the rest of the community can come on down and see what the Bridgeburg District really has to offer. They will be having an official grand opening of the Central Avenue Bridge sometime at the end of September, beginning of early October. But for the big slide, that's scheduled for July 25th, July 26th. Speaking of bridges, we will do our best, working collaboratively with the Peace Bridge Association. They just tendered their recent contract for the bridge redecking and some infrastructure improvements for the Peace Bridge. It's an $80 million project that they've funded entirely on themselves. And that project has been tendered, and construction is scheduled to start very, very shortly. The Bowen Road overpass, again, that's on the MTO's capital works forecast, and that work should be commencing this year as well. So a lot of construction with bridges. Dominion Road, thought I'd provide an update for Dominion Road, probably a bone of contention with a lot of motorists who've traversed that road. I know last year it won Canada's worst road. I'm glad to say that it dropped off the top 10, and the region listened to the great work of staff here, the advocacy of council, certainly Councilor Lubbers, who played a large role in the advocacy of getting regional staff down here to actually travel that road with me and see the condition it was in. The report goes to council tomorrow, and hopefully Public Works Committee will approve. And just to get everyone up to speed, it's a $9.2 million project combined with a $4.2 million water main, Dominion Road Transmission water main replacement. So in total, it's a $13.7 million project. We did hit a little snag, and we're working with town staff here and region staff to identify an unforeseeable problem that we had with one of the lateral water mains. Hopefully, we find a solution to that one, and we can start construction, hopefully in 2016. There is a recommendation coming to committee tomorrow that identifies an additional $3.2 million needed to fund that unforeseen water main issue. The staff recommends deferring Dominion Road to 2017 when that funding can be tapped into for the 2017 budget. Hopefully, we won't have to wait that long for construction to start. Hopefully, it stays on schedule, and Dominion Road, the process anyways, will start in 2016. That brings us to budget. So this past week, Regional Council had probably one of its most important meetings with respect to the budget process for 2017, and that's with respect to setting guidance. Basically, it's an opportunity for council members to listen to staff, gather feedback, and actually set guidance. So the guidance proposed to staff is a 1% increase. We've continued that 1% trend across all our ABCs, all our boards and committees, and as well as our water and wastewater. So guidance has been set at 1%. As you know, last budget was zero. So going forward, guidance is now at 1%, and we'll do our best to gather information. We'll work collaboratively with municipalities and the town of Fort Erie, certainly concerned residents, business owners, and if anyone has any opportunity to comment as far as you know, where they think the town, the region should be spending hard-earned tax dollars, by all means, contact myself, contact your local councillors, contact anyone at the region. We're going to gather all that information. We've gone through a long, robust process as far as making sure the process is extremely transparent, extremely collaborative, and there's actually portals on the website that people can put their comments forward and just follow along the whole budget process. So again, it's a year-long process. Hopefully by December, maybe January of 2017, the budget may be ratified by then, but from now until then, we're working towards that 1% guidance. Two very important issues will be coming to Regional Council this Wednesday. One is the Waterfront Investment Program. So the terms of reference have been set. As you know, there was two funding models. One was the Lakefront Initiative. The other one was the Waterfront Initiative Programs. Those two programs have been combined for a Waterfront Investment Program. The terms of reference have been set. I've kept Mr. Brady and staff fully apprised as far as what the conditions are. It's more based on a business model, and as that that process evolves, staff will have an opportunity to submit their application along with their business case. And I know there's a couple of projects that the town has earmarked, piggybacking on the great work that they've done with the Crystal Beach master plan. Exactly. Thank you, Councillor Lubbers. And we'll be making a recommendation probably in September as far as who are the municipalities that are going to be able to access those funds. So again, the Waterfront Initiative, the Waterfront Investment Plan, it's a 10-year, $10 million funding pool, and you're eligible up to $1 million every year through regional grants. And hopefully the town of Fort Erie can be successful and tap into those funds. I'll open it up to questions and comments, and I'll turn it over to your worship.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Mangetta. Just for clarification, the report that's going to council, Regional Council Public Works Committee tomorrow, you may have read it, I have read it, indicates that because of issues that have arisen regarding the scope and some unforeseen issues relative to the water that, and with respect to the design build RFP proposal, that they're not going to be issuing that design build RFP until January of 2017 with the intention to start construction in mid-2017 for about an 18-month construction period. That's the area between Burley Road and Buffalo Road on Dominion Road. So I will certainly do my best to push that forward. I presume that you're going to be pushing it forward, but they haven't, if they haven't sent out the RFP and they haven't got the design component of this project, I don't know how likely it is that they're going to be doing any construction in 2016.
Well, just to clarify, so there's two reports coming to Public Works that
you're
very familiar
with. That's right. The other one deals with the water service on Dominion.
Exactly.
Road.
So the one is actually setting the project status and design build evaluation criteria, which is directly linked to the RFP, correct. The other one exactly identifies the increased scope of work because of that water main situation that they found. The recommendation coming to council will be to defer any construction until 2017 when a funding model can be found to accommodate that $3.2 million in extra funding. I know you've worked very, very hard. I know the residents have been very, very patient. And if there is a way to move forward in 2016, I'm sure we're both going to be advocating that at Public Works tomorrow.
Absolutely. And my position would be that there are adequate monies in reserve at the region that they could easily fund this. The point that they're at right now, though, may make it difficult in terms of the design work that they're going to need to do. But I just wanted to make sure that the public is clear that there have been issues that have arisen. And it looks like the regional staff is trying to slow down the process. We'll keep pushing it forward, I'm quite confident.
Absolutely, yes.
Any other councillors have any questions of Councillor Luberts?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redica. Just one question from the regional councillor. I'm just wondering, Dominion Road again, in our discussions and some of the problems that we have, myself and some of the other residents in town have seen is the fact that there's some concrete slabs underneath the pavement, which causes problems with the road itself. And the concrete slab is not not a very good base for the road. And I just need some confirmation that these concrete slabs that are along Dominion Road will be removed and the proper bases will be put in underneath the pavement.
That's the plan.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, we were very careful to actually put that language within the analysis of the report and verbatim. This can be contributed to the extreme cold winters we have experienced over the same time period and the narrow concrete road base. So the plan going forward is to replace that road. Again, it's total reconstruction. It's not resurfacing. There is a distinction. So it is a total reconstruction of Dominion Road where they're going to address that narrow concrete base.
Councillor Butler, did you have a question?
Thank you, Your Worship. Councillor, you heard the Mayor speak about the fact that he and I attended the conference last week for the City's Initiative in Niagara Falls, New York, affecting the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Seaway, and that the Mayor of Fort Erie and the Mayor of St. Catharines were the only ones in attendance. And I found it really surprising to learn that those were the only two municipalities along with the City of Port Colborne that were actual members and that the region was not, and neither is NPCA. So I wondered if you could have some discussions and bring that forward and see if they would be encouraged to join the membership, because I think it's a very important initiative, especially when we're talking about the phragmites and how disruptive that is ecologically and for biodiversity. In St. Catharines, NASA was showing some directives and some coverage that St. Catharines is going to be highly affected by the year 2020, where it's not going to be reversible very quickly and it's going to cost millions of dollars to control it. So I do believe that it's an initiative that should be embraced by both of those entities, and I'm hoping that you can bring that forward. Also, wanted to ask you. Sorry. Oh, sorry. Yes. Do you have an answer?
Absolutely. As part of, you know, the whole initiative of doing business differently, I certainly think there's ample opportunity to partner with those two organizations, and certainly I'll bring that forward. I know the MPCA is doing a lot of work with respect to Phragmites, and making sure that invasive species does not proliferate the Niagara region, but I'll be more than happy to bring that forward at the MPCA board meeting level, and certainly with our regional colleagues as well.
Okay, that's great. And I just one further thing that I'd like to ask you with respect to that is if you could ask them to develop a report with respect to education to the communities and training frontline staff to prevent the spread of the Phragmites, and how that can help the situation.
Absolutely, and we have a wonderful staff at the MPCA that's very, very on the ground when it comes to that particular issue. I'll be more than happy to bring that forward. Maybe they have resources that they could pass back to the town. Piggybacking on that, there's a feel-good story in the air, and that has something to do specifically with Niagara River, and that's the Ramsar designation. So at one point, the Niagara River was the most contaminated river in all of North America. By 2020, it will be delisted, that's a success story right there. So Ramsar designation through the foresight of this council, through the foresight of Niagara Falls Council, and we're hoping to get Niagara on the Lake on board as well. The Niagara River will be designated a Ramsar site, and for those of you who don't know what Ramsar is, I encourage you to go on the website, check out what Ramsar is. It is a global significant occurrence, and there's not a lot of them throughout the world, and hopefully the Niagara River will gain that status. So I'll be more than happy to bring forward your comments and pass them back this way.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Councillor Butler. Councillor Nutt.
Thank you, Your Worship. To the Regional Councillor, thank you for providing some dates on the big slide and the official opening of the Central Avenue Bridge. Just in light of what's gone on with the Burgoyne Bridge, can you comment whether they're on they're going to meet their work schedule and their cost schedule for what this bridge was costed out?
The latest update that I have, and that's a great question, and I think it's very relevant given I'll term it a fiasco that occurred with the Burgoyne Bridge. Central Avenue Bridge is on time. It is on budget. There was some issue with the sidewalks and some of the closures where some of the timing didn't quite match up to the public consultation, what the public were expecting. From what I can see, any overruns or cost overruns fall within the contingency plan of 10%. That's not to say that all of that 10% contingency fund is used up, but I will be bringing back a more thorough report to this council so you can see the exact budgeting requirements that we needed and the finished product as well.
Anything further, Councillor Nutt? Any other councillors? Thank you very much, Councillor Annunziata. That then takes us to delegations, and the first is with respect to the Fire Marshal's Public Safety presentation by Enbridge to our local fire department. I don't see Mr. Blair, but I'm presuming that is Gary Laframboise. Good evening.
In your worship. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Redekop, councillors, Fire Chief Copland, members of the fire service, and friends. I am pleased to be here on behalf of the Fire Marshal's Public Fire Safety Council with Enbridge Gas Distribution and the Fort Erie Fire and Emergency Services for Project Assist. Regular training is an important part of being prepared for any emergency situation, and Project Assist contributes to overall firefighter health and safety by improving access to training materials. Project Assist is now in its fifth year. Enbridge has contributed a total of $500,000 to this unique campaign, with 84 Ontario fire departments receiving funding to supplement firefighter training in their communities. The role of the council is to develop partnerships between members of the fire safety community and the general public. Project Assist is a strong example of these partnerships at work. I'd like to thank Enbridge Gas Distribution for its long-term support and commitment to this important initiative. I would also like to congratulate Mayor Redekop, Fire Chief Copland, and the Fort Erie Fire and Emergency Services on being chosen to take part in this beneficial program. I thank you for inviting me here today and for demonstrating your commitment to making this province a safer place to live. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Laframboise. And the gentleman beside you is from Enbridge. And could we have your name for the record, please, sir?
Yes, Henry Timmers, Supervisor of Customer Safety. Guy apologizes. He had a personal matter he had to deal with.
No, that's fine. Did you wish to say anything to...
I will make one comment about Enbridge. Enbridge, our number one priority is safety. And initiatives like this and working with municipal fire departments in our distribution area help enhance the safety of our customers, your citizens, and the citizens of all the communities. The more we can educate fire departments and provide them the tools, the better it is all around.
Thank you very much, Mr. Timmers. And on behalf of the town of Fort Erie, we would like to thank Enbridge for your generosity in making this $5,000 donation to aid the purchase of training materials for the Fort Erie Fire Department through your Project Assist program. And we're grateful that you company has had the foresight to recognize the importance of safety in our communities. Now, do you have a check? And I'm presuming it's payable to the town of Fort Erie?
Yeah, it is.
You have some of our volunteers that wish to receive that. Is that going to be given to the chief?
Yes.
Chief, please get that money before it's... Okay, thank you. I hope everyone noticed that I gave that check directly to the treasurer.
Your Worship, if I may, that just of note, the Enbridge Gas has donated upwards of $20,000 to the fire department over the last 3 years through a number of programs that they have, and we're very appreciative of that.
Yes, that's wonderful, and I know that all goes towards the safety in our community and helps our volunteer firefighters. The next delegate is Barbara Vanderhaden, from the Executive Director of Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And once again, we get bragging rights. Good evening.
Yeah, Mayor Redekop and Council, I thank you for providing me with the opportunity to present this to you this evening. Unfortunately, it's a hard act to follow Enbridge when I don't come bearing a check. However, I do have the coveted trophy from our annual Bowl for Kids' Sake Mayor's Challenge. As you know, Bowl for Kids' Sake is our main annual fundraiser, which has gone on for many, many years. And this event provides us the opportunity to offer the programs to the children within the communities of not only Greater Fort Erie, but Welland, Pelham, Port Coburn, and Waynefleet. Through our first quarter this year, our agency has provided service to 523 children and youth through the programming. We received some funding from United Way of South Niagara and United Way of Niagara Falls, Fort Erie. However, we have no secure funding. Approximately 75% of our budget is raised through fundraising events such as Bowl for Kids' Sake, individual and corporate donors and sponsorships, grants, and third-party fundraisers. Our average traditional match costs approximately $1,000 per year to run, and group programming costs approximately $450 per group of four participants. We provide community-based programs in the form of our traditional one-to-one match, our big couple program, our big for a day program, which is offered for our littles, until they are actually matched, and I think we're sitting with about 150 children that are sitting on our wait list right now. We also have our site-based programming, which is the in-school mentoring, which goes on between September to May. It's a one-to-one match, 1 hour a week between a big and a little, and the children that receive that program are recommended either by the school principal or the school liaison. We also run the Go Girls program and the Game On program, which both are seven-week programs for young girls or boys ages 11 to 14 years of age. And it addresses curriculum items such as healthy eating, healthy choices, bullying, self-esteem, peer pressure, all those topics that are important to children at that age as they prepare to go on to high school. We also offer some after-school programs. So I would like to thank you very much. Some of you look very different from what I saw you at our Heroes on the Bowl for Kids Sake event here at Carol's Bowling, but I thank you all very much for stepping forward and either participating and or sponsoring, and we look for your continued support, and thank you very much. If I could ask Mayor Redekop to come down to accept it for the fourth year in a row. Starting to feel like home here for the trophy.
Yeah, cool.
Absolutely not.
I'm sorry that Councillor Passero wasn't here. He was the captain of the team, and I want to assure everyone that this award comes not from skill at bowling, but from fundraising. We did have Captain America, Councillor Nutt, aside from Stephen Passero, who was our captain. We had Councillor McDermott and Councillor Luberts, who came as himself, which I presume is an indication that you're a superhero in your own mind. So thank you all, because it was really fun. Councillor Passero is Spider-Man, and he was the only one who kept his mask on the entire time. I don't know what that says. But anyways, we had fun. And I know that it was a great day for big brothers and big sisters, because you had a really good turnout, and you were very successful with your fundraising. Thank you. We're going to try to do that again next year. Okay, that brings us then to a most riveting presentation by our accountant, James Brennan, from Grant Thornton, and this is the presentation of the 2015 audited financial report. I'm getting excited already.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Good evening.
Good evening. Mayor Redekop and councillors, thank you for allowing me to present the auditor's report on the 2015 financial statements for the town. The audit report reads, it's addressed to members of council, inhabitants, and taxpayers of the town of Fort Erie. We have audited the accompanying consolidated financial statements of the corporation of the town of Fort Erie, which comprise of consolidated statements of financial position as at December 31st, 2015, and the consolidated statement of operations, changes in net financial assets and cash flows for the year then ended, and a summary of significant accounting policies and other explanatory information. Management's responsibility for the preparation of and fair presentation of these consolidated financial statements in accordance with Canadian public sector accounting standards and for such internal control as management determines is necessary to enable the preparation of financial statements that are free from material misstatement, whether due to fraud or error. Our responsibility is to express an opinion on these consolidated financial statements based on our audit. We conducted our audit in accordance with Canadian generally accepted auditing standards. Those standards require that we comply with ethical requirements and plan and perform the audit to obtain reasonable assurance about whether the financial statements are free from material misstatement. An audit involves performing procedures to obtain audit evidence about the amounts and disclosures in the financial statements. The procedures selected depend on the auditor's judgment, including the assessment of risks of material misstatement of the financial statements, whether due to fraud or error. In making those risk assessments, the auditor considers internal control relevant to the entity's preparation and fair presentation of the consolidated financial statements in order to design audit procedures that are appropriate in the circumstances, but not for the purpose of expressing an opinion on the effectiveness of the entity's internal control. An audit also includes evaluating the appropriateness of accounting policies used and the reasonableness of accounting estimates made by management, as well as evaluating the overall presentation of the financial statements. We believe the audit evidence we have obtained is sufficient and appropriate to provide a basis for our audit opinion. In our opinion, the consolidated financial statements present fairly in all material respects the consolidated financial position of the Corporation of the Town of Fort Erie as at December 31st, 2015, and the results of its operations, changes in net financial assets, and cash flows for the year then ended in accordance with Canadian public sector accounting standards. The report is duly signed by Grant Thornton, LLP, May 16, 2016. Any questions? We accompanied with the financial statements is the report. There was a report to the Corporate Community Services Subcommittee, communication of audit results. If there's any questions on either the audit report or that, I'll take them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brennan. Are there any members of council that have any questions? Thank you very much, and I just teasing you in good spirits, good nature. Hope you weren't offended.
I'm never offended, sir.
Thank you.
We'd like to thank the staff of Jonathan Jensen and his staff for their cooperation this year. The audit went quite well.
I'm sure they appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That brings us to our next delegation, which is Fred Lowe, the principal of Fort Erie Secondary School, and he is going to speak about the wonderful accomplishments of some of his students. Good evening, Mr. Lowe.
Good evening, Mayor Redekop. Thank you for having me here this evening, and thank you to your council and your staff, and as well as the guests and friends in the audience here this evening. I'm going to speak about Fort Erie Secondary Schools, as you mentioned, skills competition, participation, as well as successes this school year. First of all, the history of specialist high skills major in Ontario and Fort Erie. I'll use the acronym SHSMs. They let our students focus on a career path that matches their skills and interests while meeting the requirements of the Ontario Secondary School Diploma. Students receive the SHSM seal on their diploma when they complete a specific bundle of 8 to 10 courses in the student's selected field, earn valuable industry certifications, including first aid and CPR qualifications, and gain important skills on the job with employers. The SHSM program offerings at Fort Erie Secondary School are manufacturing, partnered with Aerosafe Industries, hospitality and culinary, partnered with Niagara College, and I'm pleased to report that both of these programs will move with us to Greater Fort Erie Secondary School in September 2017, along with the Environmental Science SHSM from Ridgewood Crystal Beach High School. As well, we are putting an application into the Ministry of Education to offer a health and wellness SHSM with our local YMCA being our major partner. History of DSBN Skills, Skills Ontario, and Skills Canada here in Fort Erie. Through the years, our students have honed their passions with the hands-on offerings at Fort Erie Secondary School, where they compete locally to represent our school at the DSBN Skills Competitions, as well as the Niagara College Skills Competitions. At the DSBN Skills, all gold medal recipients move on to Skills Ontario, and where once again, the gold medalists there represent the province of Ontario at the national stage at Skills Canada. Going back 10 years at Fort Erie Secondary School, we had one medalist at the DSBN Skills to having 10 medalists this year, and over the last 10 years, we've had 50 medalists in total. This represents the successes of all our students and the levels that they push themselves, along with the dedication of their teachers and support staff. As principal at Fort Erie Secondary School, I speak on behalf of my predecessors that we have a very dedicated staff through and through, and this holds true for our staff that supported our students here this evening. And present with us, I'd like to give a shout out and a thank you to Mr. Bernier, Ms. Eves, Mr. Shirk, Mr. Cavani, Ms. Ingalls, and Ms. Parton, along with those that were unable to make it this evening due to other commitments. Through their help and guidance, our students are that much better prepared, not only for these competitions, but more importantly, for their desired career paths. Did I mention, for the first time in the history of the province of Ontario, three students from one school received gold medals and competed at the national level on behalf of the province, and that school was none other than Fort Erie Secondary School. Jason, Katrina, and Dalton represented their school, their families, their mentors from FES, and their town on the national stage with confidence, professionalism, and a high degree of excellence. Katrina Waters, so just stand up for a sec, give a wave to our council and members in the audience. Katrina Waters has the distinction of representing Ontario 2 years in a row. And that was in the baking competition, culminated last year with a silver medal for all of Canada. Dalton Bird, please stand for a sec. Dalton made his first trip to Nationals for the job demonstration competition, and he walked away with the silver medal for all of Canada. And Jason Haywood attended Skills Canada this year in the category of photography, walking away with the gold medal. So congratulations to all three of our Skills Canada representatives. And I'd like to congratulate all of our participants this year. Most of them are here this evening. You make me very proud to serve as your principal, and even more proud that I live in the same town as all of this homegrown talent, the town of Fort Erie. I have a video that will encapsulate some of their hard work and efforts this year.
Thank you.
Just one other comment. I was able to join our students and staff that were in Moncton, New Brunswick. I went for a couple of days and took the event in, and talking to fellow educators and parents there, and just the how impressed they were with our students from Fort Erie, and they started dubbing the town of Fort Erie as the greatest small town in all of Ontario.
Thank you very much. I mean, this is a tremendous legacy for the teachers and staff and for these students and for our community. So we have some certificates that we wanted to hand out. And I know that the MPP, Wayne Gates, also had some certificates. You probably, I'm just going out on a limb here, you probably wanted to say a few words of congratulations before we get it. And then we'll do it all. How about if we do it all at once then? So, Mr. Gates, why don't you come forward right now? You know, for visiting dignitaries, we've reduced the amount of time to 3 minutes. And I know that you don't even get wound up in 3 minutes, so do your best, sir.
We've done a lot together over the last number of years, so I understand that. So good evening, Mayor Redekop, councillors, regional chair, Sandy, good friend. I want to thank you for having me here tonight. This is a very special night, and I'm so happy I can be here to celebrate with you. I've always said I represent the best riding, not only in Ontario, but all of Canada. When I came to an event in a small town of Fort Erie, and I see how many students have won such incredible awards, it's all the proof I need to see that Fort Erie punches well above its weight. Looking through the list of awards and performances by some of the students here tonight, it's clear to me that we're looking at tomorrow's community leaders. Honestly, some of you may not, but I hope that some of the students being recognized here tonight stay right here in Niagara Our collective future could benefit from having them around. Their kids, they're going to create a better future we're all working towards. So to those being recognized here tonight, let me say congratulations. Congratulations on what you've been able to achieve. This is a product of your dedication and your hard work, but above all, your incredible intelligence. And I'm so very proud to represent you. While I have a stage, I want to thank the teachers at the Fort Erie Secondary School. You have so much to be proud of here tonight as well. It's because of your dedication and your passion that these kids continue to succeed. The work you have done is clear here tonight, and we as a community can never say thank you enough for your dedication to your profession. Lastly, I want to congratulate the parents in the room tonight. As a father of three daughters myself, I know there is no better feeling than seeing your kids succeed. As a parent and as a member of this community, I can say we're all happy for each of you, and we hope you cherish tonight. Thank you again for having me here. And once again, congratulations to the winners. And I will close by saying Jason has done a number of pictures of me. I thank him for that. And Dalton, I've seen him at a number of other events where he volunteers. He's in the community, outside school. He's a great young man. And it's my privilege to know the two of you. I don't know the rest of the kids as well, but I certainly know you too. So thank you very much for having me here today. And I kept that under 3 minutes, Mayor Redekop.
You did. Actually, you did. I'm quite impressed. So you have some certificates, and we have some certificates. Councillor Zank, I wonder if you could help me, and we'll hand them out to the students. Who won a gold medal at the SBN Regional Skills Competition, a gold medal at the Ontario Technological Skills Competition, and a silver medal at the Niagara College Cook-Off in baking. Congratulations.
All in the two of us.
Next, we'll recognize Dalton Bird, who used to wear my running shoes. Dalton won a gold medal at the DSBN Regional Skills Competition, a gold medal at the Ontario Technological Skills Competition, silver medal, Skills Canada, Moncton, New Brunswick. Next is Jason Haywood, gold medal at the DSBN Regional Skills Competition, gold medal Ontario Technological Skills Competition, gold medal Skills Canada. Next is Curtis Perlikowski Miller, Secondary School Hospitality and Culinary Program,
Next is Caitlin Brooks, bronze medal DSBN regional skills competition and job interview. Congratulations. Pauline Cotter, gold medal, DSBN regional skills. Quasi Lozon, skills baking competition. Finally, Kimberlyn Kiss, bronze medal, Niagara College cook-off in culinary. You should all be really proud of your accomplishments, and you know, if you think about how many Canadian champions we have in Fort Erie, just going back over all the years, you're in some pretty select company. We've got, of course, the Canadian football champion. Your activity is slightly different than football, but nonetheless, it's a Canadian championship, and you're to be commended for that. But I don't want any of you to forget the words that the MPP mentioned, and that is that you have had a lot of support over the years from the high school teachers and the staff that have worked with you. And it's just about time for you guys to go, but I wanted to congratulate you. Just remember, it's always a team effort. No matter if it's a solitary event or not, there's always a team behind you. Congratulations. That then takes us to Dominic Ventresca and Kathy Fusco, co-chairs of the Niagara Age Friendly Community Network. Good evening. You've provided us with a little brochure.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to address you on the subject of age-friendly municipalities, and specifically how Fort Erie can seize the opportunity to become an age-friendly municipality and capitalize on some of the resources that you have here. Kathy Fusco is with me here. We are co-chairs of the Niagara Age-Friendly Community Network. We are volunteers, retirees. I've had occasion to work with Mayor Riddicop in my years with the region. In fact, the two of us, you know, between Kathy and I, we represent over 60 years of municipal service, and there's no better way we can think of to come on a Monday evening to join you here at Municipal Council. but also to see the wonderful achievements that are happening in Fort Erie. And Councillor Redekop heard me say many times when I was at Gilmore Lodge, the special place that Fort Erie was, and I had the perspective of all the places in Niagara, and reaffirmed again tonight with your youth. Congratulations to the town.
Thank you.
I'd like to take you through some slides here, and briefly within the 10 minutes, thank you for the extra time that you didn't give to Wayne. But I'd like to take you through what is the new age that relates to older adults living in your community, and how the town can seize this new age opportunity for social and economic development, and how the Niagara Aging Strategy, which is a document available for guidance to the town and to your staff, and you have that at your desks as the senior staff do as well, and how you could consider respectfully some of the suggestions that we have for your taking the next steps to becoming more age-friendly. First of all, I'd like to begin by introducing this notion of the new age as it relates to older adults in Canada and here in Fort Erie. I'd like to say that today's older adults are different than yesteryear's seniors. Most of today's older adults are increasingly well, active, living longer, healthier. They're contributing to your community with their experience, their expertise, volunteer time. They are providing value support to their families. They are consumers in your local economy, and that's the one theme I'd really like to, nail tonight. And also, they're donors to worthy causes. And older adults across Canada are seen to be greater contributors, greater donors than other age groups. And in Niagara, the demographics make our recognizing this new age phenomenon more compelling. Niagara, as a broader municipality, has 18.8% of its adults that are over the age of 65, compared to Ontario at 14%. And Fort Erie is above the provincial, or at least the regional average, and well above the provincial average at 19, almost 20% of your population is over the age of 65. And this is only going to increase as the proportion of Niagara region population age 55 and older is forecast to increase to 36% by the year 2031, where it was 27% in 2006. Here's a quick overview of the Niagara region and by municipality, and Fort Erie is in the top four, just above St. Catharines, Lincoln, and again above the Niagara region. So Fort Erie has definitely got some demographic statistics that make it important to attend to this phenomenon. The largest percentage of the population in Niagara, 55 plus, is increasing, first of all, because there's a whole lot of folks here that were either born here or immigrated here in that 55 to 64 age group, known as the baby boom population. But also there's a lot of net migration, and Fort Erie has experienced a lot of that. I know on Ridgeway, for example, there are adult lifestyle type communities that people are moving here from GTA and coming and living in your town and making it their home. So this notion of age friendliness and how it's an economic opportunity, well, today, younger generations no longer represent the biggest growth market. Baby boomers will be numerically superior over the coming decades and will also control the bulk of wealth and spending in our communities. Boomer households, in this case, ages 50 to 69, spend 66% more on goods and services than millennial households. And I know that figure often, blows people away. But that is the research that is current. And it's been recognized as an economic opportunity by local agencies like the Welland Pelham Chamber of Commerce, which identify that older adults have been picking up their spending levels in past decades, and creating an age-friendly business environment makes good business sense. So we're here to say to you that there are ways in which a town council can become involved in this worldwide phenomenon. Learning more about age-friendly municipalities is one of the ways. There is this Niagara Aging Strategy and Action Plan, which I'll tell you more about in a moment. And also, there are ways of your municipality more actively becoming involved. For example, we know, and we met with Councillor Passero a few months ago, and we appreciate his support and listening, because I know he's involved in seniors' activities here in the town. And we know you have a seniors advisory committee, and so do other municipalities across Niagara, but there's levels of involvement, and we think that your committee could be enhanced and become more active in assisting the town in planning for its citizens. So a little bit about the backstory. This Niagara Age Friendly Community Network is a group of volunteers. We were funded since 2009 to 2015 from the Ontario Trillium Foundation. We have raised awareness across Niagara, fostered some local action groups, including folks here in Fort Erie, and we have developed a network to sustain the work of that group. Some of the partners, briefly, Welland was very actively involved with the Seniors Foundation there, the Senior Citizen Advisory Council, and across the Niagara region, Niagara Connects, Niagara College, Niagara Region, Brock University. The group came together early on and brought together representatives from across Niagara. They came up with this idea of a vision of a caring community, optimizing opportunities for overall well-being to enhance quality of life as people age, and the tagline being a community for all ages. So it's not just, it's not a senior-friendly movement, it's an age-friendly movement, because what's good for older adults is typically good for people of all ages. In fact, the World Health Organization has identified these domains, transportation, housing, and civic participation, and other things which really relate to people of all ages, not just older adults. So the Niagara Aging Strategy, it consists of four documents, one of which you have at your desk. That's the glossy kind of summary. There are other ones with greater detail. It was community driven. People from all across Niagara contributed to it. And methodology used was gerontologically proven methodology from the University of South Carolina at Chapel Hill, which brought older people together, not by age, but by their functional levels, well and fit, needing some help with daily living or needing 24/7 care. Five goals that the community came up with relate to leadership and engagement, how older adults can become more involved in their community in that regard. That's where seniors advisory committees come in. Today's older and more active older adult, what are the lifestyle changes that need to be? What do recreation programs within towns, how do they relate to this new reality of fitter and more active older adults living longer? Health and wellness, services and supports, and supportive infrastructure, which relates to things like transit and housing. So those are the five kind of overarching goals. Within each is about 100 different ideas that the community came up with and how they can be followed up. The Fort Erie Focus Group, and I just selected some of the things that came up in that group. This is in 2015, the summer of 2015 I'm reporting on. Seniors in Fort Erie, those representing others at that focus group, prefer to age at home. And within Fort Erie, they liked Fort Erie, they want to stay here, but they want to age at home, but they need supports. Accessible, affordable housing is an issue. Better transit, both in town and intermunicipal. I know that much has been done both here and across the region in that regard. But access to hospitals is one of the features of the focus group in Fort Erie. More health services in town. These relate to things like doctor's clinics, specialists, to reduce out-of-town travels. That was a big issue for older adults here. Making better use of closed schools, maybe converting them into medical clinics or housing or multi-use centers, recreation or retail. And also levels of government coming up with financial incentives to renovate homes and enable seniors to stay in their own homes. So here's the final two slides we respectfully ask you to consider some of these ideas and how you might want to follow up. First of all, raising awareness of age-friendly community principles among management and staff. This is part of that, allowing us to come here and kind of reviewing some of the friendly designs. Investing in easy-to-achieve items for all ages, some simple things like placing existing road signs with larger fonts, introducing curb cuts, walking paths with park benches that people of all ages would benefit from, whether an older person with a walker or any one of us in our stage of life having had an injury from skiing or hockey, whatever we might be doing, young adults with infants and strollers. All benefit from these things. So assigning a staff member on your management. AFC champion to oversee your strategy and perhaps researching what other municipalities are doing. Perhaps developing a strategy for capitalizing on the social and economic capital that you have in your community, population of older adults. Perhaps joining the World Health Organization's Age-Friendly Cities Network. There's a couple other municipalities in Niagara that have done that. enhancing your seniors advisory committee to regularly provide you with an age-friendly lens for your municipality and community and developments. And lastly, requesting a staff report to council on possible next steps for an age-friendly Fort Erie, including opportunities for provincial age-friendly community grants, which would, like Port Coburn has done, for example, where money is available provincially to assist you in this regard. So, Mr. Mayor, thank you for that time, and I'd be happy to, or Kathy and I would be happy to address any comments or questions that you may have. And again, thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ventresca. And I presume that you've provided this PowerPoint presentation to our staff?
Yes.
So, Madam Clerk, would you make sure that the councillors get a copy of that so that we can at least...
Certainly, Your Worship.
Thank you. Do any members of council have any questions of Mr. Ventresca? Thank you very much, sir. And there's a lot of information there, and I'm sure we'll be communicating with you in the future.
Happy to offer any support to your staff as needed going forward.
Councillors McDermott and Lubritz and I are nicely balanced by the youth on council, so that brings our average age down, thankfully. The next delegation then is Mr. J.T. Lewis of Erie Media. Good evening, Mr. Lewis.
Your Worship, Mayor Redekop, members of council, forgive me, I'm not used to actually speaking in a forum like this, so I am very nervous. I just wanted to take this opportunity. I've created an online news platform, and I'm now expanding into the town of Fort Erie. And I just wanted to have this opportunity so you would be able to place a face with the name, is really it. It's an online news platform. It's called eriemedia.ca. And I cover news, but I call it the platform as well because I also take news in submitted from nonprofits. I also have corporations that send some press releases to me and all that, so I make full use of them. As far as covering Fort Erie, I've already started. I've already been at a few events, and I've met Mayor Redekop there. I've been in the news business for quite some time locally, so I'm kind of been around it a little bit. With the other councils that I deal with, I actually knew a lot of them, so I was able to just tell them what I was doing. But you and Fort Erie, I don't know you that well, so I thought this was going to be the quickest way to be able to just place a face with all this. I'm looking forward to dealing with each and every one of you out at the events at some point, and hopefully we can talk more then. And I'm just looking forward to bringing what I have to offer to Fort Erie. I think it's really, there's a lot of great stuff happening here. A lot of great news, and I'm looking forward to covering it. So thank you very much for your time tonight. I'm available if anyone has any questions for me.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis, and you're right. It is nice to be able to put a face to a name, and we appreciate the efforts that you're putting in. You had lots of support from our communications coordinator with respect to allowing you to introduce yourself to us because you are part of what we consider to be an opportunity for us to communicate with our constituents. So are there any other councillors that have any questions or comments? Councillor Lubritz.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop, and thank you very much for coming forward. Just to get on with the media coverage that you're offering, is there something that we can do to provide you with information as to events that are coming forward? For instance, we have some concerts in Waterfront Park over the summer months in Crystal Beach, and we would certainly appreciate some coverage on that. And I'm wondering, is that something that you're looking to cover? Or
through you, Mayor Redekop, to Councillor Lubritz.
Lubritz.
I'm already working with your media coordinator on that information and receiving that information. Full cooperation has been offered by the town of Fort Erie.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Any other councillors? Thank you very much, Mr. Lewis.
Thank you.
That takes us then to our final delegation, which is the manager of engineering division for the town, George Stojanovic. who's going to talk about the development of the annual road resurfacing program, which is a matter of great interest to our constituents. Received another letter today suggesting another road that we can repair, not that there's any shortage. Good evening, Mr. Stojanovic.
Just going to get the presentation loaded up here. So we're really quite happy to provide Council and Mayor Redekop with an opportunity to get an insider's perspective on how town staff develop the annual resurfacing program. So the purpose of this presentation is to inform Council and the stakeholders in our road system as to how the roads are rated and prioritized when it comes to resurfacing and reconstruction. So what, first of all, just what makes a road deteriorate? All pavements deteriorate over time, but there are several factors that influence how quickly this might happen. So some of those factors are the quality of the initial design and construction, the quality of materials used, the volume of traffic and the type of vehicles using the road, the effectiveness of the water drainage system, such as the roadside ditches, the depth of the granular base of the road under the asphalt, and whether there is any utility service cuts. And just as a note, most roads in Fort Erie are affected by at least two of these factors. A little history in terms of the road's master plan. Delcan developed a road network management tool, inspected all town roads, and provided the initial road needs report in 2009. And Delcan also developed the road's system master plan, which was based on a worst to first scenario where roads with a lower rating were repaired first. And the road system master plan developed by Delcan was used by town staff for the annual road resurfacing and reconstruction programs up until 2014. So this is just a brief snapshot of the tool that staff use, as was developed by Delcan. It's very detailed. We look at about 16 different factors when identifying the condition of a road. And we look at every single road and every single intersection in town. And there's about 3,500 sections in town that we look at. So a little more on the road inspections. So in 2015, we started with an inspections program where town staff went out and inspected and rated every single road in town. Some of the ratings included factors such as the ride condition, whether there's some raveling, flushing, whether there's any rippling to the asphalt, running, distortion, and cracking. And just for some visuals on that, this is an example of flushing. There's an example picture of some raveling on the side of the road. I think we've all seen some wheel track rutting. That's where a heavy vehicle creates tracks and ruts in the road. And then I think we've all seen this throughout town where alligator cracking develops, and this is just before quite a bit more. Last one here is just a quick picture of pavement edge cracking. So now the roads are inspected biannually by town engineering staff, and in 2015 staff migrated to a risk-based formula for development of the resurfacing list that doesn't necessarily take the worst road first. So the formula is the road classification, which is on a scale of 1 to 6. This is a provincial road classification system, times the pavement condition index, and or PCI for short. And the scale of the PCI goes from 100 down to 1 theoretically, but 100 is basically a brand new paved road. And then as it deteriorates, the number goes down. So the lower the PCI, the worse off the road is. The list is then sorted inversely, and the roads that have the lowest product are the highest priority. So to provide a bit of an example in terms of a couple of different road classes, we put them in here to give you a bit of a sense of things. So as an example, we have a road A with a PCI of 60. Now the road class of that road in this example is 4. So if we multiply the PCI times the road class, we end up with a value of 240. Now road B has a PCI of 50. The road class in this example is 5. If we multiply the PCI times the road class, we get a value of 250. So in this example, road A would be addressed first because it's an inverse relationship. The lower the number, the higher up the list it goes. So road A would be addressed first, even though it has a higher PCI value. So again, road A in this case is closer to 100, so the condition index of the road is higher than road B, even though it's 50. But the road class drives the influence in terms of risk. So some more discussion here now just on road condition and risk-based analysis. So the driver of a risk-based program is the impact on the public if a failure occurs. The town's higher class roads are typically the drivers of the town's economy, roads such as heavy industrial, commercial, or institutional uses. And the strategy for risk management is defensible and considered a best practice. Just in addition, town staff communicate the assessment rating of all roads in town on the town's website. So as a note here, roads below a PCI 45 are slated for reconstruction, not resurfacing, as they're considered far too deteriorated to be effectively rehabilitated. The road list is reviewed against our 10-year capital program, and if a sewer or water main replacement project is planned in the 10-year capital program, only maintenance activities will be completed until reconstruction occurs as part of that capital project. A note on maintenance procedures. There's a number of different maintenance items that we attend to. Some of those include crack sealing, shouldering works to provide road edge stability, ditching programs, pothole repairs on asphalt roads, spray patching on surface treated roads, and localized spot repairs. So some of the resurfacing methods that we have a hot mix overlay, which is essentially just a new thin layer of asphalt placed on top of the existing road. Then there's the hot mix mill and overlay, and a portion of the existing asphalt road's milled off and a new layer of asphalt is placed on the milled surface, also known as a shave and pave, and surface treatment, also known as tar and chip sealing. An asphalt emulsion is sprayed on top of the existing road surface or other base, and it's coated with a fine aggregate. Now, just as a note on this, the application is seasonally dependent. We can only do surface treatment during the warmer summer months. So we're jumping into road reconstruction. Some reconstruction options include existing asphalt roads being pulverized and replaced with new base course and top course hot mix asphalt. The existing asphalt roads excavated and replaced with new granular base and new base course and new top course asphalt. We also look at existing surface treated roads being pulverized and replaced with new double surface treatment emulsion and fine aggregate. And this may also include a layer of recycled asphalt pavement or wrap. And then another option we have is the existing road surface is returned to a gravel road, whereby the existing surface is pulverized, graded, compacted with dust suppressant. Compacted and dust suppressant is applied, rather. So we're always looking at process improvements. Some of the things that we are currently undertaking is obviously continued staff training. Engineering staff have recently completed the Ontario Good Roads Flexible Pavement Evaluation Course. The town has also partnered with the University of Waterloo on the road optimization pilot study. The results will provide better guidance on when to apply different treatment options and when to allow a road to fail. We're also looking at other resurfacing options and technologies, but some of those are, you know, due to local contractor limitations may not be cost effective. We're also looking at different materials such as recycled asphalt, as road-based geogrid road fabric to provide better base where sufficient granular road base doesn't exist. And we're certainly tendering early to get favorable unit prices, and certainly this year is is a very good example of that, where we received very good favorable pricing as a result of council approving budget early and staff tendering early. And in addition, as part of our process improvements spill over into enhanced communication strategies, such as using our website, blog, social media, and of course, with our communications coordinator. So just to summarize for the 2016 roads assessment, the road condition administrative report will be provided to council in September, and that will compare the early 2015 roads to late 2016 roads to show what the average PCI ratings are, whether they're up, down, give us a sense of things, identify what the road needs deficit is, and draft the 2017 program based on a normal capital contribution to the resurfacing program of about $900,000. Questions?
Thank you very much, Mr. Stojanovic. Do any members of council have any questions? I note Councillor Passero is now with us. You've missed most of the fun, Councillor Passero. Now we're down to business. Any members of council? Councillor Nutt and then Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Mr. Stojanovic, thank you very much for providing this presentation, as it does offer some insight into how we evaluate our roads. Off the top of my head, I noticed a few things with the algorithm that you use to evaluate the roads doesn't match the asset management plan. We're on a 10-year cycle, so my question is, are you going to be looking at changing that so that we're in alignment with the correct contributions through the asset management plan?
For you, the answer is yes. So the asset management plan will be updated according to the methodology incorporated and utilized going forward with our road teams.
My constituents also have a large problem with, I'm just going to name off a few roads here and stick with me while we go through this. West Main was paved only partly. The worst section of West Main is left to deteriorate. It has several growing potholes. Ott Road towards Fox Road. Of course, Fox Road is in need of some serious repair as well. Half of it's paved, half of it's not. But even the algorithm, the way that I'm looking at it, just from your presentation and going through what's been explained to me through Mr. Walsh, is that we're going to repair based on the algorithm. We could be repairing over the same 10-year period the same road three times. That doesn't seem very effective from a constituent side. If you're standing and you're thinking that, like for example, the water mains on mid to upper end of Highland Avenue in Councillor McDermott's ward are going to get paved before the worst part of Highland Avenue gets addressed at all, which is the lower part going towards the Great Lakes. Just some thoughts on that. Thank you.
Mr. Stojanovic, do you have some comments on that? I mean, some of the roads that are reconstructed have impacts relative to underground infrastructure. So I don't know if much of that appears on our website to kind of respond to some of these issues that have been raised. And the other thing that I don't know whether our website shows that calculation that you showed. So it's the PCI times the road category classification. Again, I don't know whether that's on our website, but that would be helpful so that people have an understanding that some roads, just by the nature of their use, would have a higher category. But also to get to Councillor Nutt's comments, observations, we had sat down at one point and reviewed this, and these roads are evaluated in sections so that the odd circumstance that could arise is that a portion of that section may be in relatively good condition, a portion may be in very poor condition, but the average gives a higher PCI than one would think, particularly relative to the deteriorated section. Do you have any comments on that?
Certainly, what we do going forward is that we actually look at those sections where there is just a really bad section. We look at just repairing that section so that we spread our dollars as far as we certainly can. So we're not repairing the full section, but addressing it. And some of that has come out through the presentation where it's localized spot repairs, and that's where we're focusing and not on entire road stretch. And certainly just in terms of the comment in relation to other capital programs, I mean, the objective in terms of our capital programs going forward is where we can integrate sanitary sewers that are extremely old water mains that are undersized and cast iron, and storm sewers that are deficient in conjunction with a road that is in poor condition. Those are prime candidates for capital program rehabilitations, and that's where our funds are going in relation to those. And the resurfacing program is identified for those roads where they're not on the capital plan, but they certainly meet the requirements and criteria of our rating system according to our risk-based rating system.
Right. Councillor Nutt.
Just one last follow-up question, too, and one point that just came to mind is, when you're assessing the traffic flows and determining traffic flow on a road that's less traveled but is traveled with a heavier weighted vehicle may have a different impact on the road. Is that ever taken into classification? Is it ever a factor in the classification?
It's certainly a factor. The way that the provincial classification system arose is based on traffic and that's how we utilize that approach as well. So certainly the type of vehicle can have a play on that.
I'm asking that question because we have three construction companies that move heavy equipment through the back roads of my ward. My constituents always voice these concerns, but it always seems to come back to the answer that the volume of traffic isn't sufficient, but the type of traffic traveling over those roads is actually doing more damage than regular car traffic. And to have a trucking company located in our industrial park and three construction companies, all that use the back roads, Fox Road, House Road, Ott Road, Point Avenue Road as their way to get to Welland and get out to Port Coburn and other job sites. Frankly, I have a client in Welland and that's the way I travel. So I am down those roads quite often and do see the damage of the heavier vehicle. Although the traffic flow isn't as much as a Class A road or a Class B road, it's weight of the vehicle going over the road that I have the concerns with, and my constituents have voiced that several times.
Again, through you, thanks for the information. Certainly appreciate it, and we'll certainly look into that. As I mentioned, there's a number of enhancements that we're looking into the program and refining how we characterize which roads make that list, and certainly there's an evolution. We're looking at, some of the things that we're looking at is looking at the density of how, if there's a lot of roads in a certain geographic area that are rated very, very poorly, how, and everyone sees that those roads are rated really poorly, Thunder Bay, whether there's some opportunities here to, with an advanced algorithm to bring those roads up organically, and certainly with in consideration of, heavy truck traffic as well. So,
Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. Through you to Mr. Stojanovic, who I know you had mentioned that the road classification process is a provincial, it's a provincial rating system. Are we mandated by the province to use the formula?
The formula that we've established mm-hmm. for our risk-based approach?
Yes.
The formula that we've developed is our own internal process, but it's also utilized by a number of other municipalities as well. The road class system is an Ontario standard. It's based on traffic volumes. As part of our iterative process to review our own process, is that we're looking at a road that's classed, let's say, a 3, whether it should be a 3 or should it be a 4 or vice versa. So through that process, we're actually doing some additional traffic counts to verify that whether the road meets a class 3 or whether it's a 4 or whether it's a 5, just to, again, refine and make sure that we're evaluating the roads in terms of the correct class, because it's a critical component to our metric in terms of evaluating where that road resides on our resurfacing list. So,
and through you, I guess, and I've spoken with Mr. Walsh over and over about this, I know a problem that we have in Ward 3 is that, it might not be the classification needed for repair. Perhaps it doesn't incur a lot of traffic but at the end of the day, there's a lot of roads that are developing to be a safety concern for my residents. They can't even go for a walk without being nervous to sprain their ankles, for an example. This presentation was very, very informative. I'm so glad that you're able to do this, and even for the audience members and residents watching or listening in. But I guess the concern always is, you know, and a lot of my colleagues, I think, share the same concern, is how can we be creative and find more of a, I guess, a less of a temporary fix than a cold patch, but still, you know, find a fix without creating significant additional costs that will be more of a long-term fix without a total reconstruction or resurface. Is there any, I'm not an engineer, but I just feel like there's got to be something else that we can do for residents that may not have very much traffic, but aren't scheduled for resurface even until 2021.
And through you, certainly we understand that, and certainly there's, as I mentioned, in the maintenance procedures that we have, there's spot repairs, and certainly those sections of roads where there's, you know, poor sections of roads, even on those roads that are a little less traveled under our maintenance program, you know, we're looking at addressing those concerns through that methodology. So it's not necessarily resurfaced, but we're treating it as a spot repair.
If I can, Your Worship. So with that example, the spot repair example, Parkdale has so many spot repairs, it's creating such an uneven surface that it is quite dangerous to even go for a jog or a run. Is that what you're referring to?
The spot repairs that I'm referring to aren't necessarily pothole repairs, but they're sections of road that would be redone. So we wouldn't resurface both lanes from edge of pavement to edge of pavement. It would just be the small localized areas that might need repair, and to just basically buy us some more time.
Zanko?
Just one last question. With regard to maintaining roads, and I'm going to use the upper portion of Daytona, for example, we have a beautiful new road. Is there a maintenance program rather than waiting for the cracks or you know, various damage to occur? Is there any maintenance program that we have? I look at it like it might be maintaining a car. You have to. Yeah.
Mr. Stoyanovich.
Absolutely. So as soon as the road is resurfaced, in this case it's a brand new total reconstruction, the road is put on a program where every 4 to 7 years, give or take, we start initiating our crack sealing program. So if any cracks develop, those cracks are sealed, and it's similar to what we've done on the north of Pettit this year. So any cracks that develop are sealed, and that provides longevity to the road.
Zanko?
And I just thought of one other thing when you'd mentioned the spot repair. Can counselors bring those forward to the engineering department directly?
By definition, we're always doing it. I mean, so I'm sure that the staff has a good understanding of where all the roads are. But I did want to point out that the staff has been able to work cooperatively with our contractor this year in an effort to try to stretch some of the money that we have allocated to road resurfacing, and they've been able to do that. There have been some efficiencies found. The early tendering has been very helpful. And when it boils down to it, though, we have to keep allocating the resources, because these roads have taken a number of years to deteriorate. It's going to take a number of years to bring them back. But the schedule that you made reference to, where we look at, a resident can look at the website and see that a road is proposed to be resurfaced. You know, 2021 was the year that you utilized. The more roads that we can do, the more efficient we can become with respect to the resources that we allocate and the contractors that we work with, the sooner we're going to be able to accelerate and move those roads forward, so that each year we'll be able to revise that list, simply because we will have been able to repair roads that maybe were going to be done in 2017. We've done them in 2016. That means the whole list can move up. So there is hope, but ultimately, word that I think Mr. Stoyanovich was searching for to answer one of your questions was magic, but magic doesn't work. We have to allocate money. So the more of that we do, the easier it is for our staff to be able to respond to the needs of the residents. And Parkdale is definitely the upper end of Parkdale. There are three other roads in our community that have patch upon patch upon patch. And so we have challenged the staff to look at ways, something with those roads before they're scheduled for for resurfacing, simply because they do become a bit of a... Any other councillors? Councillor Lieberts and then Councillor Butler.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop, and thank you very much, Mr. Stojanovic. Can you go back to the slide where we're the road classes and the formula? And I'm just looking at that, and this formula that we're putting together here, is this the formula that we're using to determine whether we resurface the road or we don't resurface the road?
Yes, this is how we evaluate each road based on risk, and the lower the number that the road receives, the higher it is up on the list.
So maybe you can explain to me how we're going to get around this. We have a forecast of roads, and I'm going to use Parkdale for an example because we went through this earlier in this term of council. And Parkdale was scheduled to be resurfaced in 2011. And so you do a patch, which Councillor Zanko was talking about, just an area. So when you do that area, now your PCI becomes better, I would say. So instead of being a 60, your PCI became a 70. Then you multiply that by 4, and you end up with a higher number. But the road, so now, how are you going to prevent your forecast from getting messed around with? And we have people out there that are saying, well, my road's scheduled to be resurfaced at this date, but now we're going to end up with a road that's in worse shape because we didn't do a couple of these here patches, so now we're going to end up with a lower number. And so your road's going to get moved around. How are you going to prevent that from happening? Because for me, the biggest thing is these people don't want to know when you're going to do crack sealing and when you're going to fix this and when you're going to patch. They want to know when the road is going to be repaired and put back the way it was when they either moved in or when it's going to be resurfaced. And how are we going to prevent that from happening?
Mr. Stojanovic.
Through you, the roads have a life cycle. And certainly as part of our evaluation and our evolution of our development of our schedule for the roads to be resurfaced is and you mentioned a good item here, is if we touch up a road and we bring up the PCI of that road, and then just by that sheer fact, that road may then fall off the radar. And so part of our methodology is to look at the road not just in terms of the condition rating, but also look in terms of the lifespan of the road, recognizing that at certain critical milestones and at the end of its life cycle, we have to go through either a partial or full reconstruction.
Dr. Lieberts?
Okay, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. And maybe you can give us an example using Parkdale. Where is Parkdale at this time? Is it going to be resurfaced? And if not, how are you working this out with your formula? When's the life cycle of the road?
Through you, I don't recall specifically where Parkdale is, but I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Parkdale is on our capital project list for a capital program, capital project. So as part of that capital project, it would be resurfaced, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that may be part of the drainage program that's driving some of this in Crescent Park.
Right. So from the presentation, some of the roads, even though the PCI might be quite low and even the risk times or the road class times of PCI would potentially put that road into the list of roads to be resurfaced. If that road is slated for a capital project, that we basically identify it's part of a capital project, it's going to be resurfaced during the process of that capital project. So we are looking at things from a lot of different ways, and we're looking at our capital projects in conjunction with the road resurfacing program.
Councilor Lieberts?
Okay, thank you very much. And if you can go back, go to the slide where it was the PCI is below 45.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was another one.
Yeah.
Okay, so if it's below 45, it's slated for reconstruction. And how is that put on the list? Is that going to be on the 10-year program, and then you're going to be on the list, but My problem is we keep changing the way we do things, and things get moved around, and now somebody's going to see their name or their street name on the list because it was below a 45. And then for some reason, because we changed our formula or we changed the way we review things, they get bumped around, and that's where they become unhappy.
Mr.
So how are they going to be rated on this here?
You, the PCI 45 is a number that we're looking to identify basically any road that hits that threshold. Either it becomes part of it gets thrown into the resurfacing program, or it becomes its own capital project. If the scope of the project and scope of the road and the reconstruction required, craft road potentially, if the scope of that project is such that it warrants to become a capital project. And so then it'd be incorporated into our 10-year capital program.
Yes, I understand that being incorporated, but how does it get rated as far as when it will be done? That's where people are concerned about. How do you rate that now? Because there's no formula. You're just below 45. So is it going to be done in 3 years? Is it going to be done in 2 years? Is it going to be there and stay there? That's what they want to know. Is it going to stay where they're at? If it's going to be done in 2021, are they going to be getting it done in 2021 and not be bumped to 2023.
For you, this is the new methodology, and if they're on the list for 2021, then that's when it will be done.
And if things change and our reviewing process change, they're not going to get bumped?
For you, again, the roads, again, are inspected biannually, so we do inspect them. For that particular road, it'll be every 2 years that we would inspect it. So if that road continues to deteriorate, it may be moved up the list as opposed to down list. I guess that's the only caveat to my comment there, that it'd stay on 2021. The only caveat there, again, is just based on the deterioration of that road. If it deteriorates quicker than if it deteriorates quicker, it'll just go up the list because the condition of the road gets worse.
Okay, thank you.
Councilor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I just wanted to thank you and your team for taking care of the roads in the Thunder Bay area because they have been so bad for so long, and to give my constituents the news that they're going to be taken care of this year was wonderful. So thank you very much for your hard work.
Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. I'll apologize in advance. I've only seen 5 of the slides, so I don't know if my question was covered in the previous 70 slides. Regarding the 10-year capital program for roads requiring either full or partial reconstruction, I know that we try to tie those to any type of other works. That requires at least some form of design process, engineering process, as we're going through right now with Catherine Street. We had a conversation at budget time for 2016 about advancing some projects if they fit priority, if we could do road reconstruction along with waterworks and tie that into any possible infrastructure funding that would come down from provincial and federal governments. So my question in a nutshell is, do we have any projects on the books right now that are designed and ready to go that fit those criteria?
Mr. Stoyanovich.
Through you, the answer is yes. And further to that, at the most recent IS Business Subcommittee meeting, the direction from the committee was to move forward a number of projects from 2017 design into this year, move them forward so we're shovel ready with those projects, and a report will be coming to council for July, in fact. So it's quite timely you mentioned that. So you'll be seeing that coming in July, where we're looking to advance a number of 2017 projects for design to have them basically ready for shovel ready as soon as possible. And again, further to that, there's a number of projects which are in design right now for 2016, which we have pushed through the RFP process quite quickly. And again, we've gotten approval from council early. We've got those RFPs out quickly, and we'll be basically ready with shovel ready projects in Q3 of this year should we receive any kind of provincial or federal funding. So there's probably give or take somewhere around $3 to $4 million of shovel ready projects that we would have effective as of Q3. And then if subject to those 2017 design projects coming and moving forward, we probably come into about having about $5 or $6 million worth of shovel-ready projects within between Q3 and Q1 of 2017.
Excellent.
Councilor Passero?
Yep, through you, Mayor Redekop. And I'm hoping that conversations have been happening with our director of finance as well, because generally the last couple of rounds of any type of infrastructure funding has required a one-third municipal component. So I'm hoping that conversation is taking place as to what dollars we need to have set aside to pull the trigger on these projects so they're not just sitting on the shelf.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Before I go back to Councillor Nutt, Councillor McDermott, you haven't spoken yet. Did you have any questions that you wanted to raise at this time?
A comment.
Please.
So I have to say that over the period of time that I've been here, I've been involved in infrastructure services, and I've always found it relatively easy to pursue the things that our constituents are looking for. And I know that Chris mentioned Highland, where we have that underground construction of road resurfacing at one end and the cosmetic portion at the bottom end that doesn't really need that underground work that you're going to work around to get resurfaced. That's very much appreciated. I know the pressure that councillors are under with regards to roads, and I know the same pressure goes with infrastructure, and I know that that can be trying at many points when you're talking to constituents, but I appreciate all the work you're doing, and this long-term planning is certainly a benefit to all of us. Thank you.
Councillor Nutt, and then I'll go back to Councillor Lubberts.
Yes, I just had two more questions that came up based on what Councillor Passero and Councillor Lubberts brought up. My first question is probably easier for you to answer, and that is, you said a number of projects. We know that the Catherine Street was $6 million. Could you put a figure around the number of projects that you quoted, just roughly? What do we have on the shelf that is shovel ready to go? Is it another $6 million? Because we are going to be starting budget guidance in the near future, and I think it would be helpful to Councillor Passero and I, as being chair and co-chair of that committee, that we could have some idea, because if there is a way to accelerate those projects, that is something that we definitely want to take a serious look at. So do you have off the top of your head a number?
Through you, IS business subcommittee, we brought forward basically a table which identifies a number of projects that we have taken from our 10-year capital program, and the total value of those projects is somewhere in the range of $30 to $35 million of the projects. And so the direction to staff was to move forward the 2017 design components into 2016 and get those rolling, so we're shovel ready with those sooner than later. And again, there's a number of projects which in 2016 design mode will be ready in Q3, and that total value of those projects somewhere in the range of, again, between $3 and $4 million. And if we bring in the 2017 design projects into the equation, we're looking at somewhere in the range of $6 to $7 to $8 million of shovel-ready projects that we would have. And again, that administrative report will come to council in July.
Okay. And my second question to something that you had stated to Councillor Lubberts earlier is, if a road is rated, say, in the next 4 years to be resurfaced, but you discover that we have a bad winter, there's a lot of water main breaks underneath, and you decide to move it to the capital projects list, would that effectually, I guess, move it down then in the project order? Because then it has to go through a full design. So to Councillor Lubert's point, if a road is to be resurfaced in 2021 and all of a sudden there's a bunch of water main breaks underneath because we have a problematic winter, effectively it could be bumped due to the underlying design. Is that correct?
It would go to a different list.
It would go lower on the list of capital projects, or it would go into the capital projects forecast for after 2021?
Through you, certainly if the road deteriorates further, that potentially would result in that road getting bumped up the list. So it wouldn't be 2021 in this example, it would be maybe 2020 or 2019. Further, you mentioned if there's underground infrastructure issues that may affect our decision to resurface that road or not. We haven't come across those typically. We typically have a pretty good sense of which water mains are needing to be replaced because we have a long tenure program. We have a master stormwater plan and wastewater plan, which have identified these projects for a number of years coming up to today even. So we have a fairly good understanding of that. I mean, there's other opportunities that exist, whether it's even just a relining. So we don't have to actually excavate the road out. We can just reline the water main or the sewer and create that repair trenchlessly using that sort of technology. So there's really a few different options for us there.
Councilor Lubertz?
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Mr. Stoyanovich, can we go back to the slide with the list of streets that you gave an example of?
The example?
Yeah, just to... I'm not going to hold you to any of the names of the
streets. No, we're not going to say names.
Streets, but...
Yeah.
Is that the slide, or you want the one that,
had
the list?
No, the one with all the streets listed.
Slide with the list.
Oh,
which you couldn't read.
Just for information. This is the tool that staff use, and it's really just to show some of the
so this is scenes. I guess what my question really is in the beginning. First of the report that we're seeing right now. This is the new criteria for making our decisions on what roads are going to be done and what's going to be done on them.
This is, just to take a slide back, this is the road system, road network management tool, and this tool was developed by DelCam for the
This town. Is what we're going to be using.
And this is what town staff use. They actually take a laptop with them when they're driving the roads, and they'll enter the information in here as they're driving on the roads and putting their information here. And ultimately, it pulls that data, and we get our information out of there.
Yeah, but we haven't developed a list yet. We're just working on it right now, right?
A list for 2017 going forward type of thing?
So yeah, a list like this here. We haven't developed one yet.
This is really just a snapshot of what the tool looks like. It's not a list. It's not any particular ranking or order. It's really just to show a little bit of behind the scenes how much is involved and sort of the level of detail that staff take to actually get the list that we actually publicize on our town's website of the roads that we're going to resurface.
Yeah, I understand that. What I'm saying is we don't have a list yet that we're going to put on the town's website. We're just developing that list.
We do have a list. There it is on the town's website. So there's actually two lists. There's an A to Z listing of every single road in town from A to Z, what the rating of that road is, and whether it's on the list or whether it's part of a capital program or whether it's just scheduled for regular maintenance. So there's 3,500 give or take sections, and it's a 35-page PDF document that's online. In addition, we have a second list, which is our 5-year road resurfacing list, which identifies all the roads in the 5-year plan that are scheduled for resurfacing.
So that their part is all done. So
this isn't that.
I know that. This is just an example, but the list is there for everybody to look at, and they can go by there and look for their street and see what's going to be done. They can also see if it's going to be resurfaced, if there's going to be some crack sealing, if it's going to be little patches here and there. That's
great.
What's on the report. I had one other question related to that. I forget.
If it comes to you, you can always contact Mr. Stoyanovich, and he can provide that. But you've gotten out the information that the website does contain a listing of information alphabetically and by rating.
Mayor Redick,
remembered it?
Yeah, I just remembered.
Good.
This slideshow here, I know Mayor mentioned earlier, if you could bring up on our website the formula that you're using, it would be helpful. Can we have the whole slideshow on there so people can read through it and get a better understanding of what's there and how their roads are being evaluated? And not just be on the website, but I'm thinking if it could be on our cover page on the one side, that because this is the time of year when everybody in town wants to know about their roads. In the winter, they want to know when they're going to be plowed, and now they want to know when they're going to be fixed. So can we have it on our front page? like our homepage, and then they can just go and see how their road got rated and why their road is in the category that it's in right now, according to the list.
You can certainly take that up with Mr. Walsh and Ms. Tesmer. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Stoyanovich. This has been very helpful, and I think that it will help to answer some of the questions that we get from the public, and perhaps the public can take advantage of the opportunity to visit our website. So it's now 8:08. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and then when we come back, we'll start with consent agenda items. Call this meeting back to order. Are there any items that anyone wishes removed from the consent agenda? There are none, then Councillor Passero, you have the first resolution with respect to the consent agenda.
Thank you, Mayor Redekamp. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, that Council approves the consent agenda items as recommended.
Are there any questions or comments with respect to any of the items in the consent agenda? Councillor Butler.
Thank you, Your Worship. I just wanted to ask a question with respect to correspondence 2B regarding the GNCC's request to consolidate transit system for Niagara.
Yes.
I happen to agree with that, so... because I do think that it's important to residents of every stripe, and in particular the students and marginalized populations, as they quote in the letter. A single system, I think, will help. And my question then is for Acting Director Stojanovic, or maybe the CAO, whichever one can help me. But do you think that you can look into the possibilities of moving up the timetable so that we can take advantage of the 2016 federal funding opportunities, and maybe look into how we can be part of that conversation with other municipalities?
Mr. Stojanovic, would you be able to respond to that?
Through you, certainly we'll have a look at that and seek to take advantage of the funding opportunity.
Thank you. And then in correspondence 3D with respect to the RBIA's meetings, I just wondered if, and I'm not sure who I asked this question to, I'm assuming that it would be, again, to the acting director, with respect to decorative lighting on Ridge Road north of the Dominion, and tree and flower enhancement, and also the request was asked if we could look into signage that would say welcome to the downtown Ridgeway core. Is that something that you could look into as well?
Certainly we could look into that. That would likely go through TCC, through the Traffic Coordinating Committee for signs and lighting, so we'll certainly look through that committee to look at those items.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Butler, before, just to respond to your first question, this letter from the Greater Niagara Chamber of Commerce is very much supportive of what's happening at the region right now, which is an effort to try to get the three main transportation, public transportation providers, St. Catharines, Niagara Falls, Welland, to work together to create an integrated system that could then be expanded to serve all of Niagara. And the other municipalities like Fort Erie, which have transit systems, will be brought into that at some point. So this is a reflection of some of the stuff that's going on in at the region right now. But certainly it would be helpful for us to see how we can enhance our part of the picture. Are there any other questions or comments with respect to any of the items? Mr. Cookett.
Your Worship, to the Councillor. I just wanted to add in... Councillor Butler did ask for us to look into the signage to the BIA area, and I apologize it's taken so long. We are working on a wayfinding report to come back to Council. What we're finding is there was a study done long ago with various phases, and the second phase was partially complete. So we're trying to sort out what signs have been placed, what signs have not been placed, and that report is in the works. It's coming soon. We will be making recommendations to get those signs in place, be it for the BIA areas in particular, because that's definitely necessary. So we are working on it, and it is coming.
Yes, of course.
Just to follow up, the signage that they were requesting that night is, and I'm not sure if you're familiar, downtown corridor, there's up above is the wrought iron signage. It's something similar to that. So would that be part of the report then?
It will be now.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? If none, then I'll call the question with respect to the consent agenda items. All those in favor? None opposed, that is carried. Now we're going to deal with report number CS13-2016, and Councillor Zanko, you have a resolution regarding that.
Yes, thank you. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Nutt, the Council receives for information report number CS-13-2016 regarding the 2015 annual financial report attached as Appendix 1 and published in accordance with Section 295 of the Municipal Act 2001, and further, the Council transfers $1,251,370 into the 2015 General Levy Operating Budget Surplus to the Operating and Capital Reserve Funds as follows: $297,901 to the GFESS Theater Reserve Fund, $252,684 to the Self Insurance Reserve Fund, $96,802 to the Emergency Management Reserve Fund, $26,987 in BIA surpluses be carried forward to 2016, and further that $576,996 to the General Levy Rate Stabilization Reserve Fund.
Are there any questions or comments with respect to the resolution, Councillor Passero?
Thank you, Mayor DeKalb. Just a thank you to staff for their hard work and diligence in preparing this. It's not always the attention getter than it should be. I'm probably disappointed that Mr. Brennan's presentation is not the one from tonight that will make the front page of the papers. It probably got trumped by three or four others. But it's a lot of hard work. It's a very important document. We're definitely going in the right direction, and our contributions back to the reserves point that out, and I'm looking forward to what the 2016 audited financial report comes to bear, hopefully more good news. Thank you.
Anyone else? Call the question. All those in favor of the resolution? None opposed. That is carried. Councillor Nutt, you have the next resolution.
Yes, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zanko, the Council extends draft plan approval for the Levy Court plan of subdivision located on the south side of Dominion Road and west of Craft Road until September 23rd, 2018, and the owner and regional municipality of Niagara Planning and Development Services Department be so advised, and further, the Council approves the amendments to the conditions of draft plan approval for the Levy Court draft plan of subdivision as detailed in Appendix 4 to report number PDS-55-2016 and directs that the amended conditions of draft plan approval be circulated to the applicant, the applicable agencies in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act.
Are there any questions or comments with respect to the recommendation in the report? Mr. Brady, I wonder if you could explain, in the body of the report, there's an indication that this was the draft approval was extended by staff from September 2015 to the present time, and or till June the 23rd. How was that done? We've seen some short-term extensions. This seems a rather lengthy extension. Can you comment on that?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Staff can extend a draft plan of subdivision as long as we realize that there's movement being made in terms of the issues that need to be addressed. In this particular case, the Niagara Peninsula Conservation Authority had asked for the draft plan to be circulated to them as there was a condition in it that they wanted to review, and they had put in place a new fee for a review of draft plan conditions. They didn't communicate that very effectively to the applicant, and so therefore the applicant didn't pay that portion, so the Conservation Authority refused to provide comments until such time as that they paid. We became aware of that recently and then stepped in and basically said this has to stop, and at that point in time the money was paid to the Conservation Authority. We received the comments, and then we can move forward. So with those kinds of circumstances going on, we always feel that it's best to keep a draft plan alive and give council the opportunity to make the decision.
And with respect to this particular plan of subdivision, I know that there were some financial concerns. Have any of the conditions of draft plan approval been addressed that you're aware of?
Through the mayor, no, not really. The current owner of the property would appear isn't interested in moving forward. However, we've been informed that the property is going to be sold. But one of the conditions of the purchase and sale agreement, or at least I've been told over the phone that one of the conditions of the purchase and sale agreement is that the draft plan be extended. So the party that's, I've been informed that's going to buy the draft plan is a reputable house builder, and I'm aware of their circumstances. So I'm optimistic that with an extension to the draft plan that a sale of the properties will occur and we'll see some activity on the site.
Very much, Mr. Brady. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your candor. I'm going to support this, but I must say that it was approved originally in 2003. There hasn't really been anything that's gone on since 2003. By 2018, that'll be 15 years, and I would ask that you at least apprise the owner or the new owner that council would be expecting that there be some action taken on this, which is what we've done consistently with others. So with those comments, if there are no other comments from councillors, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Carried. That then takes us to new business inquiries, and there is a response to a former council inquiry, and I'm thinking that might be Mr. Jansen's signature. Would you like to provide us with the response to Councillor Butler's inquiry regarding water bills and notices for landlords? You don't have it?
I do now.
Yes. Okay.
Sure. In response to the inquiry at the June 13th council and committee meeting, regarding water bills and notices for landlords. This inquiry relates to the distribution of water bills and notices where there are both a landlord and tenant. In particular, the question was, could a landlord receive notice at the same time as the tenant so as to avoid issues with arrears and related shutoffs? Town policy notes that owners are to establish a water and wastewater billing account in their name using their current mailing address. Owners may request and authorize that other specifically named persons are to be sent a copy of the billing in addition to the owner and will be charged the established fee. The fee is $6.31 per mailed letter. Town has made exceptions to this by grandfathering some accounts that previously allowed the tenant to receive the only copy of the mailed communications. Even in these circumstances, the final notice must be mailed to the owner as well. The following are the general alternatives available to landlords to deal with this issue. A, forward the mailed communication that the owner receives to the tenant. B, request duplicate bills notices be mailed to the tenant, which the tenant would be expected to pay as part of the bill total. C, pay for the charges directly and structure the rental terms accordingly, or D, call the town to receive verbal account information at no cost as required. Additionally, Water Division staff is working with service providers to launch electronic billing or e-billing options later this year and is investigating opportunities to direct a copy of the correspondence, which would be low or no cost to the customer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jansen. And are there any items of new business or inquiries by members of council? Councillor Nutt, then Councillor Zanko, then Councillor Passero, and then I'll go to my left.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just noting the high volume of people we had in here tonight, it is stifling hot in here. And I ask that since we're on our summer schedule, as part of our health and safety review, if Mr. Cookett is the COA, could look into addressing either, dress code, the air conditioning or something. Maybe we could go to a business casual during the summer schedule. Your thoughts, Mr. Cookett?
To Your Worship,
some of us have. Yes.
I would appreciate going to a summer dress code. That would be great. I did text our facility manager earlier to see what we could do about the temperature in here because he can regulate it from afar. I got no response. I believe he's on vacation right now, but it is very humid in here, and it may be nice for staff to maybe dress casual for the summer. Yeah, I'll leave that with the mayor.
My
suggestion would be that if we have an air conditioning system, that we make sure it functions. So councillors are at liberty to wear whatever they wish to a council meeting, but I still think it's a problem that needs to be addressed.
Worship, I just know that I'm not wearing a tie tonight, but wearing my sports jacket and dress shirt and everything, it is really, really hot for me, and I can see the moisture glistening off of Mr. Sayonek's forehead over there. So,
well, the fact that you didn't have a tie on was a clue to me that you're not a member of staff.
I just feel bad for them, as you know, understanding that I'm extremely overheated here.
Poor Mr. Stojanovic was up on his feet for 40 minutes. So yes, that's a very good point. And Mr. Cookett, I would ask you pursue that. Councillor Zanko.
Thank you, Your Worship. I just actually wanted to make note for my colleagues with regard to the ash tree removal. I know I've had a number of complaints, not necessarily complaints, but inquiries, simply because residents are coming home to big white X's on their trees and there hasn't been much communication. And I did speak with Ms. Tesmer about this today, and she is going to be releasing a communications piece regarding the tree removal, but I would imagine as we progress, my colleagues will be fielding similar calls. So there will be a communications piece that has some frequently asked questions, from my understanding.
That's very helpful, Councillor Zanko, and I don't think most people realize that the bulk of our tree canopy in Fort Erie is ash, over 60%, and our arborist advises us that all of the ash trees will die over a period of time, which means that we're going to lose that 60%. The only saving grace is that the other trees will presumably fill in. It depends on what species fill in, though. Buckthorn is a candidate, which is an invasive species, and so that's kind of the bad news portion of that. But the good news is that a lot of our natural species will have the opportunity to at least out. But over this is going to be an interesting 10-year period. And so we have many ash trees along the sides of roads and in parks, and those will all be removed. Some of you may have been along the Niagara Parks Commission. There are two areas now where they have completely clear-cut all the trees because they were all ash. One is near the golf course on the Niagara Parkway, just beyond Service Road 8, and the other is down just before you get to Legends. So they've been cutting the trees because if they haven't died, they're going to die. And we can all see those as we drive around and look in some of the woodlots. You can see the dead. So that is very important information, and I know Ms. Tesmer.
And maybe I could just ask a question. I did send an email today, but for the sake of peace of mind for my constituents, is it fair to say, and I don't know if Mr. Stojanovic or Mr. Crooked can answer this, when we mark a tree with the big white X, is it fair to say that that's on the town's dime? They're going to be paying for the removal of that, and it's not necessarily at the residents, or it wouldn't be at the residents' expense in any case if they see that white mark.
Mr. Stojanovic, are we marking our trees with white?
That is correct. The only trees we'd be removing would be within town owned property or within the right of way. So as such, we wouldn't be removing private trees.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Your Worship. If I could just add something to that as well, because I had a constituent call me who was in a situation where they received a letter from bylaw enforcement, and it's a property standards issue and lot maintenance issue. They have an ash tree on their property that is dead, and because it poses a safety concern, they received a letter saying it does have to be removed. So the town is removing the ones with an X on our property, but it is within the realm of possibility that residents are being asked to remove some on the private side at their own expense because it is posing a safety to their neighbors. So just wanted to add that. What I would like to raise under new business, as I was enjoying my personal commitment today, and you can tell by the amount of sand in my hair how well I did, it was a rough afternoon. Ditching. I wanted to raise it tonight. We went through a situation within a neighborhood a couple of weeks ago that had been ongoing for a couple of months. I think we have found some sort of resolution. It's not ideal. It's not what the residents would like to see, but it's a problem that is too far gone that we can fix. During my commitment today, I received several calls from Alfred Street, where we're currently doing ditching. One, I consider it to be a neighborhood issue. When I get a second series of concerned phone calls from residents from a neighborhood, now I'm seeing it to be much more than just a neighborhood concern. The ditches, from what I'm seeing firsthand and from what I'm hearing, why are they so deep? Why are they so wide? Why are they so steep? I don't know what tsunami we think that we're preparing for, but we seem to be ditching to the nth degree in neighborhoods that have never really seen a lot of flooding problems. And the neighborhoods are irate, to put it mildly, that they're coming home to find these massive trenches now in front of their homes where no water issues had really seemed to exist before. I'm wondering if we can kind of put a stay of execution on any further drainage works until maybe myself or other members of council who've had similar concerns expressed can meet with some members of infrastructure. But we've got to find a better way. I realize that there are calculations done that a ditch should be so deep. I realize there's something that has to be said as far as where the current culvert sits. But even if a current culvert is 4.5-5 feet deep, doesn't necessarily mean we need to hollow out the ditch to that level. We could trench just to the culvert if we're looking to remove sediment, but it just seems like we're going over and above in our ditching right now. So I'm hoping we can kind of put a stop to that for a little while so we can figure this out, but this is now two complete neighborhoods that I have had ringing my phone off the hook saying, what the heck is going on here? And to the point we just raised about the ash trees, I think a lot of people forget exactly how much of their front lawn is municipal property until they come home and find out we put a ditch there. Now you realize how much is municipal property because now they have no front lawn left. They can't get a lawnmower down there. Their driveways are starting to crumble because the ditch has now been excavated so much. And the steepness is such because we can't go back past the gas lines. The steepness is so much to create that, that there's no way that they can safely take care of these ditches on their own. So I just put that out there for staff's consideration. I'm hoping that I could sit down with whomever you would deem appropriate. We've got to figure this out. If we're going neighborhood by neighborhood, let's figure out where exactly the drainage issues are, and let's just do what we have to do to take care of the drainage issues that currently exist. I'm not too concerned about the 1-in-100-year flood at this point in time if it means that people are losing half of their front yards and are looking at a 5.5 to 6 foot steep ditch in front of their yard where up until then just a swale has existed. So I apologize for my tone, but it was very frustrating today and I sympathize with these residents. And I'll be going to meet with a group of them as soon as council ends tonight. So I'm hoping that we could arrange that. I see some of my colleagues nodding their heads, so it might be ringing familiar with them as well. Thank you, Your Worship.
Thank you, Councilor Passero. Mr. Stojanovic, when is the next Infrastructure Services Subcommittee meeting? Do we know? Well, that could be that. In the meantime, that could be a topic for discussion. But if councilors wish to speak to you, that would be fine. I don't know whether you had any comments. I'm going to also ask Mr. Cook.
Through you, just very briefly, I did also receive a call, in fact, two calls today regarding Alfred Street. I had forwarded over to Doug Campbell, who's our manager of roads, and Doug indicated to me that he was actually going to take pay a visit to the site tonight to have a look at that and prior to the IS Business Subcommittee. The meeting date for that I don't have in front of me. But we typically have them every couple of months, and we just had one just a couple of weeks ago. So probably in the next 6 to 7 weeks, the next meeting would be set up. I think Tom has something.
Thank you. Mr. Cookie, did you want to make any comments? I must say that I've been familiar with the exuberance of those individuals who use Great Owls for over 30 years. And it probably is a lot of fun, but it's it needs to be moderated.
Yeah, I don't think there's a need to wait to the next subcommittee meeting. I think we can schedule a meeting for this week or early next week as soon as possible. In the interim, we'll stop any ditching until we find a solution. Hopefully there is one. So we will look into that. Mr. Walsh is away this week, but so maybe best that we meet on Monday. In the interim, we'll try to find a solution, but we'll stop for now.
Very much. Anything further, Councilor Passero? Okay, to my left, any councillors have any new business or inquiries? Okay, there being none, then that takes us to motions. And Councillor Butler, I wonder if I could hand the chair to you just with respect to this, because I have the motion.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Mayor Redekop has a motion on the floor with respect to removing a condition of the River Lee Estates draft plan of condominium that he'd like to speak to.
Thank you. Yes, this motion was put on the floor at the last regular council meeting, which was May the 24th. And since then, I have had discussions with the chair of the Niagara Parks Commission and Mr. Piller. Mr. Piller is fully aware that he hasn't got his order in council yet. But he has asked that this be further postponed so that the Niagara Parks Commission, who now apparently has this to the cabinet level, where the order in council would be granted, he'd like them to have that opportunity. So I'm going to ask that this again be postponed. I've checked this with the clerk. She indicates, because it's already been put on the floor, the proper motion at this point would be to move to have it postponed to the July 19th regular council meeting. Councillor Nutt, you had seconded the original motion. I wonder if you'd be willing to second the motion to postpone.
Certainly, Your Worship. I'm willing to second that.
So that's my motion.
Thank you. That motion is deferred and postponed. I will return it. Oh, that would be helpful. All those in favor? Motion carried.
Chair back?
You can have the chair back.
Thank you. Are there any notices of motion that anyone would wish to give this evening? There are none. That then takes us to consideration of bylaws. Does anyone wish any of the bylaws removed from the package, Councillor Nutt?
Yes, Your Worship. If we could have 43-2016 removed, I should have earlier stated that I have a conflict of interest as a relation to a property owner on the
sure.
Nye Road.
Yes. Okay, so
thank you.
We'll take that out of the package because of the conflict. And Madam Clerk, you'll note the disclosure of pecuniary interest.
Yes, Your Worship.
Are there any other bylaws that anyone would like removed from the package? Okay, there being none, and that's for third and final reading. So, Councillor Butler, you have the package for first and second reading.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor McDermott, that the bylaw package containing 65-2016 to authorize the venture financing for the LED streetlight replacement program project, 66-2016 to regulate the management of a system of waterworks in the town of Fort Erie and to repeal bylaw number 199-04, 67-2016 to adopt a water and wastewater collection policy and to repeal bylaw number 240-96 in part, 68-2016 to authorize the entry into a lease and municipal capital facility agreement with the Greater Fort Erie Youth Soccer Club, Bertie Centennial Park, 865 Ferndale Avenue, 69-2016 to exempt lands from taxes levied from or for municipal and school purposes, Bertie Centennial Park, 865 Ferndale Avenue, 70-2016 to amend zoning bylaw number 129-90, fence regulations, Town of Fort Erie, 71-2016 to regulate fences in the Town of Fort Erie and to repeal bylaw number 70-2013, 72-2016 to amend fees and charges, bylaw number 40-09, as amended fence variances, 73-2016 to amend the accessibility policy for the Town of Fort Erie, bylaw number 128-12, and 74-2016 to exempt certain lots in Plan 59M-319 from part lot control 65, 67, 73, and 75 Bartle Avenue, Harbor Town, at Erie Road Subdivision, Fort Max GP Limited, is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. So the bylaw package is on the floor for questions or comments. No questions? I've got questions with respect to three of the bylaws. The first one relates to 67, and my question would go to perhaps the treasurer. Paragraph 6.3 talks about the engineer or the treasurer being able to waive the base rate under certain circumstances. That's found on page 4 of the bylaw. Mr. Jackson, be able to advise what the criteria might be? Circumstances might be where that would be considered?
Through to the mayor, those would be very rare circumstances. No specific examples come to mind at the moment. I don't know if our acting engineer might have any of recent discussions, but I know this was a matter of other recent reports, so it has been scrutinized quite a bit.
Mr. Stojanovic, do you have any comments on that?
At the moment, I can't think of a specific scenario that would apply to.
And then of a similar vein, paragraph 22.2, which is found on page 8 of the package, page 7 of the policy, talks about the Water Emergency Relief Fund and how there's some relief available if there's a water disconnection or reconnection. One of the criterion that's referred to is income. And then it says other criteria. Mr. Jansen, help me with what the other criteria might be.
Yes, this is a program that's administered by a third party by the Salvation Army. So when it comes to those criteria, it is primarily
this is a compassionate type.
Yes, yeah, I was just trying to reread it again to see if there's anything else specific, but it is based primarily on income and on affordability.
And the circumstances of the specific case. Okay. I then had a question with respect to bylaw 70, which deals with fences. And it, in terms of the zoning bylaw, we don't have the complete zoning bylaw. I didn't have a chance to look at it. I presume that any type of structure within a site triangle as defined is prohibited. Would that be correct, Mr. Brady?
Any structure, including fences, and in this case, that would be bushes that could be operating as a fence, are prohibited within site triangles, yes.
And then the other bylaw was number 71, which is the new fence bylaw. And on page 10, paragraph 7.12 of the new bylaw talks about the appeal. If a decision is made by the director not to grant a variance to the policy, then there's an appeal to the council. And paragraph 7.12 of the bylaw states that the applicant shall be notified in advance of the meeting at which the council will consider the report. I'm wondering whether those who may have opposed the application in the first instance, and there's an indication of who is entitled to notice when an application for a variance is made, I'm wondering whether they shouldn't also be given notice, because I can foresee the individual who has made the application, which has been denied, wanting to address council on the appeal to the council. But I would think that there are others who may have been opposed to it who might also want to speak to council. Do you have any comment on that, Mr. Brady?
The bylaw as it's written certainly says that notice will be given to the applicant of the date of the meeting that they're concerned to be in front of council. I don't believe there is a part in there that talks about notice being given to other interested parties. I think it's correct they should be given it, but I don't believe there is a part to that in that bylaw. You may wish to ask for that to be considered.
Right. You're quite correct. There isn't a reference further on, and I do agree with you, Mr. Brady, that it's probably appropriate. So I was thinking that maybe an amendment that would include the words "and those who received notice of the original application" should also be included in paragraph 7.12. Council that agrees with that, maybe we could amend. Councillor Passero, so basically after the words "the applicant" in the second line of 7.12, we would add the words "and those who received notice of the original application." That's your motion, Councillor Passero. Is there a seconder for that? Yes. Councillor McDermott, I saw his hand go up first. Is there any question as to the amendment that's being proposed? Anyone need it read again? Okay, Councillor Lubberts? Okay. If there aren't any other questions, all those in favor of the amendment to bylaw 71? Sorry, yeah, 71. Opposed? That's carried. Are there any other questions or comments with respect to the bylaws in the package? Not. Then Councillor McDermott, you have the bylaw for third and final reading, but I would ask that you proceed with the package, not including 43, which we'll deal with separately.
Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Butler, that bylaw 65-2016-66-2016-67-2016-69-2016-70-2016-71-2016-72-2016-73-2016-74-2016 are given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed? That is carried. Councillor McDermott, could you then proceed with third and final reading for the bylaw 43, please? It's at the top of the...
top of mine.
At the top of yours. It's third and final reading. That's the one we just excluded.
Okay. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Butler, that bylaw 43-2016 to provide for drainage works in the town of Fort Erie known as the Nye Road Municipal Drain are given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
Any questions or comments by members of council? If not, all those in favor? Opposed? That's carried. Councillor Lubert, you have the next resolution.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor Redekop. Moved by myself and seconded by Councilor McDermott that bylaw number 75-2016 to confirm the actions of council at its meeting held on June 20th, 2016 is given first and second reading.
All those in favor? Not opposed, that is carried. Councilor Passero, you have the next resolution.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Moved by myself, seconded by Councilor Zanko, that bylaw number 75-2016 is given third and final reading to be signed by the mayor and clerk under the corporate seal.
Are there any questions or comments? All those in favor? None opposed, that is carried. That takes us to scheduling of meetings, and I must say before I go to the councilors that the ceremony recognizing Duffy Andrew is actually going to be held at the banquet hall at the Legion, not the Leisureplex, and that's at 1 o'clock on June the 30th. Are there any meetings that anyone wishes to refer to? Councilor Passero.
Thank you, Mayor Redekop. Our Accessibility Advisory Committee is meeting for the last time this year before their summer break tomorrow at 5 p.m. at the Gibson Center.
Are there any other meetings? Councilor Butler.
I just wanted to remind everybody about the Ridgeway Festival that's coming up on July 9th and 10th, and hope to see everybody out there.
How's the weather going to be? Hot?
Very hot.
Okay. If there are no other announcements, Councilor Passero?
My apologies. I should mention, because I don't know when we meet again prior then, but considerable chatter is happening regarding whether or not there are fireworks this year. There will be fireworks this year. It will be on Canada Day. I cannot stress enough that the fireworks are connected to Canada Day and not to the Friendship Festival, which seems to be causing some of the confusion since their change of date. So the fireworks will be on Friday, July 1st, 10 p.m., same location as years and years and years gone by, at the foot of Beatrice Streets, by Lakeshore between Beatrice and Dominion Road. That area will be closed as it has been in previous years, and something we're going to do differently this year just because, and it's a good problem to have, so many people are coming down to watch the fireworks. We will also be enforcing no parking on Beatrice Street. It will remain open, but we'll be enforcing no parking just in case we need to get emergency vehicles down there. So fireworks, July 1st, 10 p.m., looking forward to seeing everyone.
Excellent. Good job. That takes us to the final resolution then. Oh, Councillor Nutt. Surprise.
Surprise, surprise. Moved by myself, seconded by Councillor Zenko, that Council adjourns at 9.08 p.m. to reconvene in a regular Council meeting on July 18th, 2016.
Although...
So that Councillor Passero is aware that's July 18th.
Oh, July 18th. You told me the 19th. Should be the 18th then. So how do we handle that? 18th. It was the 18th. Okay, perfect. All those in favor? None opposed? That's carried. Thank you.